is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to the weekly news magazine, Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Outlaw. Well, we see there are a lot of shootings happening in our country. You see this latest one in Columbus, Ohio. It's a little different. It's a little interesting what happened there. As well as immigration, the executive director of Center for Immigration Studies, always a great guy, Mark Gregorian, will be here. We've got a lot. You know, the media is crickets on immigration right now. Of course, this was a Trump policy. They'd be all over it. You know that. It's pretty sick, actually. I want to start right up front here with another great friend of the program here, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. He's retired. He's the president of London Center for Policy Research, a CIA-trained intelligence operations officer, 35 years of experience in global national security. And Colonel Tony, I want to start right here, Tony, with the shootings here. Yeah. There have been incredible, Tony, the amount of shootings that are happening in our country. But I mean, about every couple of few days, there's another shooting. Let me just give an example here. Yeah. We look back at, we had the Atlanta one. We had the, the massage places in Atlanta with three of them. We had, eight people were killed, I think, in that one, Tony, right. I believe, by the gunman. Hey, you had Boulder, Colorado. You had, there was a... on the 22nd of March, a shooter there at the supermarket killed 10 people. My golly. There was another one in Orange, California. There was another one in Rock Hill, South Carolina, Indianapolis. Remember the FedEx in Indianapolis? That was another 8 people. I mean, it seems like every few days there's another shooting, and now this one in Columbus, Ohio. Staying up first at 50,000 feet with the shootings in our country, anything change at all? What in your mind is going on nationally with this thing that there are so many, a rampant pace with the under the Biden administration?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on as always, Malcolm. And I think let's look at the common denominators first. Most of the shootings are actually in what I term gun control paradises. These places where gun control from, I would argue, law-abiding citizens is first and foremost. A lot of the public, I think, would be prepared to counter this rapidly if more people were armed. I know it's controversial to say that, but I think that's a big part of it. The mass shootings you're talking about were orchestrated mostly by people who were essentially criminally insane in some regard. There was mental instability. There's evidence in one case there was an Islamic element, the one in Colorado, the guy there was radicalized and crazy. So I think, you know, guns are simply a technology. They can do good or bad. And this goes to Columbus. So in Columbus, and I'm from Ohio. I went to college mm-hmm. in Dayton, Ohio, and I know quite a bit about Columbus. And that officer who responded to that shooting actually saved a black girl's life. It's really interesting how the media portrays this as more black on, you know, white on black police violence, when in reality, I've looked at that video, and I'm a member of law enforcement here in Virginia. I'm the Homeland Security Advisor to Sheriff David Decatur down in Stafford County. I spend a lot of time with his officers, and I examine training. And the officer in the case of Columbus acted exactly like he was trained. That scenario, as a matter of fact, is one of those scenarios I've actually been trained on in simulators. A knife wielding person will kill you as dead as a gun wielding person. I mean, knives are no joke. And so, you know, we need to separate out and categorize things properly and then analyze them properly as well. I don't believe there's a racial component to that shooting. And many of the others, I don't believe so either, other than the fact that they happened essentially in most of these cities you're talking about. I think most, if not all, are controlled by progressives. It's interesting that, you know, in places like Texas, there was a shooting a few years ago where a gunman went into a church and he was shot. He shot a couple of people, but he was shot himself rapidly by people who were armed. And so I think you've got to examine the reality in which we live and try to be factual and fair about it, and not be overreactive or emotional And yes, guns are a weapon that can be used to kill people, but they're used every day. In 99.9% of the cases, guns are used properly. I live here in Virginia, as I mentioned, and Virginia is, except for the urban areas, there's a clue, places controlled by progressives, there seems to be a real lack of violent crime and lack of gun use. So, you know, I think we need to look at things for what they are and try to not be emotional.
Yeah. When the Columbus, Ohio one had happened, that young lady there. All right. I was just going on air in my daily show, The Voice of a Nation. I was just going on the air and had NPA coming on. I had some of the law enforcement coming on. And here's the thing. The headlines were all, it was really remarkable before the story was even out. And I really didn't even know the whole story at that point, Tony, but the headlines were all one way. And I pointed this out of the program. They were all pointing out that this was a black teenage girl, every one of them, white police officer kills. And they were all charged headlines to inflame people that don't pay attention, that sit at home, and then they say to themselves, well, those damn police officers again, what the hell are they doing? They're all killing these young black kids again. I mean, what's that? Now, this police officer, this story was remarkable. And, you know, I want to point out a couple of things to folks. I mean, this is how sick this is. This is beyond a laughing game anymore, Tony, okay?
Yeah.
The White House press briefing, Jen Psaki comes out. She says, talking about this Columbus, Ohio case with the attack with the knife, she says this was due to systemic racism. Now, what right does she have, the press secretary, to say that? She wouldn't even know, even if it was that. But she does. We do know it's not systemic racism. It has nothing to do with anything. It has to do with this officer saved lives. And, you know, I wondered when the 911 call came over, Tony, of the show, and they pleaded with the cops to come. And I'm thinking ahead, what's the day going to look like, as I've said to my cop friends, when the cops don't come? I mean, I wouldn't come if I was a cop. You said, I would ask first, are they black or white? Where do they live in the neighborhood? Tell me what their salary level is. Have they had confrontations before? I mean, I want to know all this before I put my life, because other than I'm going out there and I'm going to be jailed, Tony. It's pretty sick, isn't it?
Well, yeah. So let me point out what I think you're picking up on. Most of these urban areas, such as Columbus, New York, Detroit, Chicago, the progressive politicians have made the police the bad guy in all situations. This is not random. And in all these places, that's what's going on. I mean, in New York, you have Mayor de Blasio, a Stalinist, freeing people from violent crimes early out of jail and increasing the crime rate there. I always get into it on Twitter with folks from Chicago. Every weekend there, Malcolm, there's a mass shooting, but nobody cares because it's black on black and people are just apparently fine with it. And to your point about how the White House politicizes, this is no random thing. Not only did Jane Psaki politicize it, Valerie Jarrett, President Obama's only former advisor, when she tweeted out about this, this is what she said. A black teenage girl named Mia Kalia Bryant was killed because a police officer immediately decided to shoot her multiple times in order to break up a knife fight. It's like they purposely worded in such a way to make you believe that this guy just wanted to shoot her. Malcolm, I know a number of law enforcement officers. Not a single law enforcement officer do I know goes into a situation saying, man, can I ramp this up as quick as possible? Can I do something to really increase the risk? Nobody does that. But people like Valerie Jarrett, Jane Psaki, Mayor Lightfoot in Chicago, they all do this. And it's for their political power. This gives them more power and more authority to make the police the bad guy. It's very dangerous. And to your point, police officers are now in a situation where they have to make a decision, will they go in or not to a neighborhood? Minneapolis, they tried to defund the police, figured out they couldn't do it, and then they had to refund them because they recognize that sworn law enforcement officers. Yes, of course, you're always going to have bad apples. There's always, in any segment of society, professional service or law enforcement or government, you always have a certain number of bad apples, and they should all be held accountable. With that said,
which has nothing to do with policing, by the way,
has nothing to do. But there's no systemic racism. I would argue, and I think you'd probably be able to verify this pretty quickly. Most metropolitan police departments are run by blacks.
They are.
Number. And so when you talk about this, you know, you're talking about, defund the police, you're defunding the very people who have risen through the ranks being minorities who now enforce the law. So again, the only logical conclusion that I can reach is, well, they're doing this purposely for political benefit and trying to make the law enforcement the bad guys for their own bad policies.
Yeah, I mean, it's really outrageous at this point. It's pretty sick. And when you just talk about the cities that are being run by black officials and so on and so forth, the police departments, the mayors, exactly what you're speaking about there. I got to point out to you, Tony, I want to actually point out to all listeners as well. There is a must read. It is one of the best articles I have seen on this topic. It is from Professor Larry Bell, who speaks so well about this. And it just went live on our platform at AmericaOutloud.com, friends. It's from Professor Larry Bell. You'll see it at the top there. It's entitled this, Imagine a Day in the Life of a Cop. And Tony, this piece is so well written. He gets into the stats and the facts and the data, but he really then gets into what these people go through in their families. And it is so true, real, and rich what he puts in here. I had to call him just today to compliment him on this story because it was that good. Share that out there, friends, because it sets the playing field accurately. Even LeBron James, came out with a tweet that said, you're next, accountability, with a picture of the officer there. I mean, what sense does that make? The guy who really should be a hero, but is now being a villain. And people like this, these sports players and celebrities, and they come out and they have to weigh in, of course. And it's terrible what's going on here. The narrative is beyond anything I've seen. And if we don't have law enforcement domestically here, Tony, we are just screwed as a nation. I mean, we got nothing left at that point because they are the first line of defense here at home. I mean, we have a society that has totally broken down without law enforcement. You know, my son was thinking about becoming a police officer, but at this point, Tony, he's really rethinking. He's 17, going to be 18 now. And he's really rethinking the whole structure of it. He's really thinking more about the military now as well after college a bit here. Right. But he was thinking about law enforcement, and he's kind of spooked now with what's happening out there with the level of disrespect that's out there. So it's pretty remarkable, buddy.
Well, if we get at that point, I think it's important to recognize that these people do volunteer for this. They do go through training, and many of them want to serve the public. This is a public calling. And when you make it more difficult for them, Malcolm, people, the very people who you want to be serving don't. And again, regarding the black communities, every person I know in a black community want law enforcement. The fact that, as you pointed out, the Columbus shooting, that family called for the police to come break up that knife fight. The police came. And now because of that, LeBron James, which I don't know how his account still is not suspended, threatens a member of law enforcement who did their duty and did it very well to save a black girl's life. It's really incredible.
Yeah. So we talk about the guns. It has never been the guns again. You could might as well use tanks or grenades or missiles. What difference does it make?
Or a
knife in that case. You took the words out of my mouth there. But all right. So, brace yourself, people, for this next one. But there are many adjectives for this man. But Anthony Fauci, which is I don't know what to say anymore about this man. So he has come out now in the last many days and has been now weighing in on gun control. He was asked a question on, of course, CNN. Where else would it be, right? And and the story was written as his narratives crumble, Fauci weighs in on gun control and started saying it was a health epidemic and what had happened and so on and so forth here. Where does a health official like this, Tony, find the responsible manner to weigh in on something he, first of all, knows nothing about, number one. Two, he's screwed up everything. He can't do what he's supposed to be doing, right? What do you make of this?
So I term it liberal privilege. they always accuse people of white privilege, but this is liberal privilege. This is the same thing that you get from Bill Gates. Bill Gates is not I got a degree in environmental studies. I study the issue. I understand what's true and what's not. Bill Gates is not author, has, you know, he has no background, yet he comments on it. Same here with Fauci. Fauci has no experience, background, or ability to comment with any clarity. You know, and I call him on Twitter Dr. Garden Gnome at this point, because I think a garden gnome would know better than to speak out on something like this. And yeah, if you don't know what you're doing, you can cause a lot more damage than good. And clearly he's out to do it again, because he's simply regurgitating progressive talking points. And again, I go back to the fact that there's millions of guns in this country in the hands of law-abiding citizens. And are there issues that come up in any circumstance? Absolutely. But again, the honest answer is he should be looking at his own industry. The pharmaceutical industry, the misdiagnosis of a disease and a treatment kills more people than guns. If you get a prescription drug, the chances are far greater that you're going to die from taking a prescription given to you by a doctor, because it's misprescribed, it's the wrong prescription. You're far more likely to die from that than guns. But you don't see Fauci saying a word about that, because he and others make huge amounts of money off the pharmaceutical industry. So the last thing they're ever going to do is criticize a real source of death, of inadvertent death, because it doesn't meet his personal or professional requirements.
Yeah, and of course, these drugs and antibiotics and medications are all made in China as well.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all profiting from this stuff. They're all sleeping with each other, basically. One big global party, I guess, going on here. Let's turn our attention a little bit overseas here. A couple of very interesting things going on here. So we have a 1-2 front with China and Russia right now. China is the real threat, always has been. It was never Russia. I've certainly talked about this plenty of times here. But there are multiple challenges happening right now. Russia, of course, with Ukraine, looks like they're pulling some of the troops, from what we see, off of the border, away from the border there in the Ukraine, which is interesting. A couple of things happened here. There were some threats being thrown back and forth from both Moscow and Beijing, which told Washington and Biden specifically to stay the hell out of their affairs. No other terms. That's what they said just a few days ago. And of course, Anthony Blinken came back and threatened them back. But, you know, I want to just ask you right out, because we're opining on this, and we've got a special feature coming up on this conversation. Here's the thing, Tony, let's be real.
Yeah.
When it comes to Russia, whether it's Ukraine or the Crimea now, which they've taken, obviously, I mean, how is America going to stop them? And the same thing with China. How are we going to stop them with Hong Kong, which we haven't and we're not, and Taiwan, which we haven't and we're not? What are we going to do, sanction them for their checking accounts again? I mean, we're no position. What are we going to do? This tough talk that the administration, I would say we're a bit flat-footed here. I don't think there's many options for us. Is there or is there?
No, well, let's do Please. Russia real quick and then go to China. So Vladimir Putin is a thug. You got to accept that. I think we've talked about this before on your show. People I respect tell me that Vladimir Putin has personally murdered people in elevators in Moscow, which I don't doubt. But you got to accept it, you know. And so you deal with a thug with a response of strength, not weakness. And so far, the Biden administration, Blinken and company, have not done anything to push back on Vladimir Putin. I think he will move forward to expand his influence over Ukraine and be more aggressive. That's just the way it works. And I don't think Biden knows how to deal with it. Blinken doesn't. And I know General Austin, Lloyd Austin, SecDef, and I'm not sure if he's going to be able to do anything either. So I'm skeptical. But that's not something that is going to, that's not going to affect us directly other than our NATO relationship. We could do another show on that at some point. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about China, because that's something that does affect us all. China's mailing fentanyl to us. Some of the current drug crisis is based on them. All this woke stuff. I'm trying to get money together for the London Center to do a study that examines the potential, the links. I believe there are direct links between the woke mentality we see in the United States and China funding efforts behind the scenes to continue to get woke more in there. This social justice warrior stuff they know is disruptive to our society. They see that as a military benefit. And then the Pacific, we've seen that they're actually doing more overflights, more aggressive overflights to Taiwan, to the Republic of China. And there's every indication that if they continue to observe weakness, which they've seen from us, they will move on Taiwan. They will move to make Taiwan part of the public, the People's Republic of China. And of course, the I consider the democracy movement in Hong Kong pretty much dead, because there's not a thing Biden's going to do to push back. And some of this has to do with economics. Boy, Malcolm, I don't know what kind of computers or cell phones you use, but the left seems to love Apple, but they tend to overlook the fact that Apple uses Uyghur slave labor and other things to build their technology. And it's kind of like it's really ironic that the left is so committed to allowing China to run and do things aggressively and not do anything to push back anywhere. And so I see the Biden administration really encouraging, because of their lack of a plan, lack of ability to put together a plan. I see them basically allowing China to run the table regarding foreign policy.
You think we're headed, do you believe we're headed to some type, on some level, of a confrontation ahead here with China?
I do. I do. I do a lot of study of Europe in the 1930s and Hitler's expansion.
Okay.
The one thing Hitler recognized is that basically incremental aggression works very well. And I see the Chinese doing that. And if you don't push back and say, this is where we will not accept this, they will continue to do it. And they're using soft power all over the world. They're getting into Africa. They're getting into supply chains. This is no small issue. And yet the Biden administration seems to have no idea, no plan on how to counter it.
No, they absolutely don't. Briefly, tell me, because I want to get over to Afghanistan in a moment, too.
Sure.
But briefly, tell me about this. Very interesting. I don't think a lot of people are aware of this, and I find this really fascinating. But the 1990s Pentagon policy on fighting two fronts simultaneously. And this, I believe there's something to do with this. It was abandoned under Mark Esper. People are concerned with China and Russia on two fronts right now. And of course, there is a lot of evidence that they are coordinated efforts as well. Right. I mean, let's face it, they're both, well, kind of the word frenemy, they're both adversaries. We need to keep them close by. But what do you make of that policy, and how does that impact this relationship?
So this, it's a great question. So basically the Pentagon, from pretty much the end of World War II until recently, had a basic idea, the philosophy of two and a half wars, being able for the United States to take on two and a half wars. Now, that means two near peer competitors such as China and Russia, plus essentially a small conflict such as a counterinsurgency such as Vietnam or Afghanistan. Now, I'm not here to argue pro or against that. I'm just telling you that's the basic philosophy that was established. And during the Cold War, that was the going kind of philosophy. And by the way, despite the fact that we no longer have that policy, we're still spending as much money as ever on our defense. So my concern always is, what are we spending this on? I'm not one that believes in an unlimited spending spree for the Pentagon. I've seen where spending unlimited money did not help U.S. education at all. So I think we have to be much more practical. But what has now happened is the Biden administration picked up where the Obama administration left off in spending defense money on their pet projects like global warming, which we could have a whole different discussion on that, on essentially trying to create a military that's very much focused on social issues, not on being able to win wars, which is very dangerous. And so the basic idea that we should be exercising using a grand strategy, and that's the other term that you probably won't hear kicked around much anymore, but I've advised those seniors at the Pentagon I work with to establish and maintain a grand strategy. That is to say that you must have an ability to come up with a plan to defeat peer adversaries. And if you don't, you're going to walk into something and not be able to win. And I would argue during the period, again, I studied the period between World War I and World War II a lot. One of the things we did do, Malcolm, to be very much prepared for World War II, is the Rainbow Plans. You can Google this, the Rainbow Strategy. Basically, we sat down and came up with a series of exercises and strategic plans to be prepared to fight near peers. And as a matter of fact, Plan Orange was essentially the plan developed during the 30s, which was used to defeat the Japanese. This plan developed in the 1930s was used in the 40s to defeat our adversary. We just don't think in those terms anymore. And the Pentagon is much more driven by large contractors and what they want to spend money on, rather than on military requirements that would actually make us a better and a more effective nation to defend our allies and our equities in the global circumstance.
Okay, thank you. Let me get over to Afghanistan with you. So now this is interesting. We know there's been a lot of this very controversial, to say the least, as far as removing the troops fully from Afghanistan. But now there's been a deployment of B-52 bombers and an aircraft carrier, which is supposed to signal the Taliban that the U.S. intends to ensure a peaceful withdrawal of American forces, which I understand is going to begin to start in just a couple of weeks. Now, it was officially announced that it would be before September 11th, or that was the deadline, but it looks like it's going to happen much sooner than that. They're actually saying they'd be out of there by potentially July or something like that. Now, yeah. The military commanders are warning that a full U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan, here's the catch to this thing, Tony, I want you to talk about. So our military commanders are warning that a full U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan, and we've heard this before, but here it is, could lead to the collapse of the U.S.-backed government in Kabul and the Taliban's return. And now, when they say could lead, that's BS. Will lead. Forget the could. You can replace the could with will. I mean, it ain't could. And this will become a ground for Islamic fundamentalist group again. What's your take on this move and Afghanistan as a whole? Are we making the right decision?
So, yeah, look, I wrote a book on this, Operation Dark Heart. The last chapter is the path to victory. And for better or for worse, I think Mike Pompeo and the Trump administration took that. The only solution to Afghanistan is a negotiated settlement. The Taliban have been essentially attempting to undermine the government of Afghanistan since we helped create it back in 2001, 2002. And I would argue the Afghan people are not ungoverned, they're self-governed. There is no tradition of a centralized democracy or monarchy. I mean, there used to be a king of Afghanistan. No central government has ever sustained itself because the people are just not interested. And already about, I'd say, three-fourths of the provinces in Afghanistan are now controlled by elements of the Taliban in some form. I would argue that our job is, unless we're willing to put 500,000 troops in there for the next 10 years, we're not going to change the fabric of Afghanistan. Our biggest issue needs to be two focus areas, counterterrorism and intelligence collection. That's it. The Pakistanis have stepped up and done a lot more. I'm very critical of the Pakistanis, but I've seen them doing a lot more to help rein in some of the Taliban they controlled. And by the way, Malcolm, we helped create the Taliban. They were called the Mujahideen during the Soviet occupation back in the late 70s, early 80s. Yeah. So we were part of this. And those very elements we helped create came back and started attacking us back in, over the past 20 years. Our issue needs to be focused on countering terrorism and the ability of terrorists to come here. How the Afghan government sorts itself out needs to be an issue by the Afghan people. It's not our job to do that. I saw Michael O'Hanlon from the Brookings Institution make a comment that we need to be the ones picking the president of Afghanistan. Last time I checked, that's a bad idea. And I don't think it's in our interest to do that. We become the issue and we have been the issue. So at this point, I do support, as President Trump supported, yeah, our withdrawal of conventional forces. Should we be there to do offensive counterterrorism operations? Yeah, we should go in, take care of business, do what we need to make sure that radical Islam is not able to come and mount operations or be a safe haven for Al-Qaeda, which it was before, or ISIS. ISIS has a presence there too. But simply to be able to counter terrorism does not mean we become the Praetorian Guard to protect the central government of Afghanistan. So at this point, I do believe Mike Pompeo did the right thing. I believe the negotiated settlement between the Afghan government and Taliban is the right way to go. And it's time for us to move on and do other things.
Yeah, right. You perfectly put. You say it super well there, Tony. And, you know, it is a troubled spot. It's always been a troubled spot. When Russia was there, it was a troubled spot. It's going to continue to be a troubled spot forever. I agree with you. And here's the thing. We've got to, and I'm not a nation building kind of guy. I totally agree with Trump. Let's keep our troops safe and secure. But my point, of course, the military commanders and my sarcasm was that they're warning that the U.S. withdrawal, well, of course, it's going to lead to that. It will definitely be the collapse. I mean, I think they're going to push hard there because they always have, Tony. Yes. That is a mess. It's a mess. But what you say is the counterintelligence is very important. That's what we're talking about here. Right. We have to be strategic in nature, more special operations than having, you know, boots on the ground exactly. all over the place. Yeah, I agree.
Exactly.
I totally agree with that endorsement. We're listening here to Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, one of the, I believe, as you just hear him speak, one of the best out there. It's such a pleasure, privilege to have him on the broadcast here, for sure. A couple of footnotes here. He made a lot of interesting comments here, including when I asked him straight out about China, and he answered very honestly, said, yeah, we're definitely headed to confrontation, Malcolm. I mean, so that should put us all on the radar screen to go up. Now, you know, listen, we're all over these issues. There are about two or three issues I clearly made notes on to talk to Tony about. We should have him back during the week, obviously, as we can. But here's the thing. I'm doing a program here on Monday called The China Threat, Made in America. And it's a very special feature, which we dive into China in a very interesting way. I have a panel on this thing. I want you to tune in, my friends out there, to The Voice of a Nation, my daily program, 5 to 7. Now, we're 2 hours every day now, 5 p.m. To 7 p.m. Eastern time. You catch us anywhere in the world on America Out Loud Talk Radio for sure. But catch us Monday there. Also, everything is back now at AmericaOutloud.com. The entire platform's been rebuilt, revitalized, truly remarkable. We've added about 11 or 12 new programs on the weekdays and the weekends. Incredible programming. Scientists, doctors, engineers, military experts, you name it. This thing is rocking over here. So please get over there and share the out loud truth and help us in our quest and our mission to save our amazing country here for sure. Again, tremendous thank you here to Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. Always, Tony, thank you.
Oh, thank you, Malcolm. Always enjoy joining you. Thank you.
And coming up next now, Mark Gregorian, Executive Director of the Center for Immigration Studies, joins us. And this is going to be another, this is what I call a 1-2 punch with Tony and Mark, two amazing guys here. So it hardly gets any better than this, my friends. Stay right there. More Viewpoint in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Five incredible years, and we're just getting started. Well, they say time flies when you're having fun. Well, it also flies by when you're on a mission of love. Love of country, that is. Well, our goal is to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. You can listen in on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. AmericaOutloud.com. It's a fight for the soul of humanity.
Now, never before in our history have we witnessed the level of hatred that is now being waged against our law enforcement. While anarchist groups create havoc and overwhelm our first responders, these same groups and their corporate supporters are calling for the police forces to be shrunk and defunded. What can you and I do to make a difference? How can we stand up for what is right and to show our support? That's what I'm going to tell you about this incredible new platform. It's called ShopToTheRight.com. It's a new shopping platform that will help you find businesses that align with your values. They feature products made in America. They support veteran-owned businesses as well as our law enforcement community. This is a time when we need to stick together. We need to shop together, and we need to support each other. It's time for you and I to make some noise and stand up to protect our country. And one easy way to do that is to shop and give our money to companies that don't seek to destroy our way of life. So join the fight for liberty. ShopToTheRight.com. Support those American businesses that support law enforcement and veterans.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@AmericaOutloud.com.
We join you back on Viewpoint this Sunday, and thank you, my fellow Americans, for joining me always here on the mission here at America Out Loud Talk Radio. Now, Viewpoint This Sunday, this program, I want to remind you, goes to podcast Sunday afternoon, just around 2 o'clock, just a little bit after 2. You'll catch it on any podcast network in the world, Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, iHeart, you name it, it's on it. So it goes pretty quick, but you'll catch us first thing Sunday mornings as the weekly news magazine, 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the network on iHeartRadio. And you can certainly catch us. We have an encore later in the day, too, 6 p.m., by the way, on America Out Loud Talk Radio. So join us there. And don't forget, of course, you heard me talk up front with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. A lot of cool stuff back at AmericaOutLoud.com. Check it out with the new site, the new platform. Amazing things are happening. Let's talk a little immigration right now with one of my favorites here. Well, this was a great program today because I have two favorites, Schaefer and Gregorian. So Mark Gregorian is here. He's executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies. Now, CIS, by the way, is an independent nonpartisan research organization out of Washington, D.C. These are the go-to folks for immigration, and they put it out there. I mean, CIS.org is a place you want to be checking out to see the latest on any of this. So I think I've got, that's the website, right? I didn't screw that up on you, Mark, right? I believe it's CIS.org. At least it was when I was there this morning, right?
Yeah, so, still is.
Okay, all right. All right, let's talk first about this crazy month of March that just went by here a couple weeks back here. But the numbers were staggering. Of course, we don't have the full numbers from this month yet, but we're talking just shy of 20,000, 19,000 children. We're talking now children, Mark, that were either left in the desert or abandoned or used by the coyotes and the cartels. But with all these policies that the Biden administration has reversed, these numbers are staggering. And the reports are here that the numbers in March all the way around were life-shattering and historical in nature. Talk to us on what's really happened, because the media is hiding all of this story. Go ahead.
Yeah, the number of people the Border Patrol caught on the southwest border was at a 20-year high. But that's everybody put together. What's even more remarkable is that the underage illegal immigrants, they call them unaccompanied alien children, and they're not really unaccompanied in the sense that smugglers bring them to the border, but they're passed over the border with, you know, on their own. That number there was, as you said, 19,000, double the previous month, the highest number that has ever been recorded. And the number of what they call family units, which is adults traveling with children, almost tripled from February to March. And these are, you know, the numbers are supposed to go down in that late winter, early spring period, and only go up starting, you know, now, April and May and June. Well, if they're going up, even in the winter, it's pretty clear they're going to keep going up more over the next few months.
Do you expect this to even become more crazy in the next few months?
I think so. I mean, I can't guarantee it. You know, the problem with predicting the future is it hasn't happened yet. But it's even if the numbers don't go up as much, they're almost certainly going to go up. They're going to be very high. They're at historically high levels of kids and families. And the reason is not some kind of, you know, disaster that people are fleeing in Central America. These are mostly Central Americans. Now, those countries down there aren't in great shape. I'm not saying they're fantastic, but there's nothing really different or new. What's different is at our end, because all of these loopholes that exist in our law have been there for a while. Trump tried to kind of paste together something that restored stability to the border. It would have been better if Congress had changed some of the rules and plugged loopholes. Yeah. Congress wasn't doing that. So Trump put in place some policies that did a pretty good job of stabilizing things at the border. Biden came in and broke the border that he had inherited. It was working and Biden broke it. And specifically, every unaccompanied minor is simply being let into the country. They're held in detention until their parents can be found. And then they are delivered at taxpayer expense to their parents. So the federal government finishes the smuggling conspiracy by delivering them to the front door of their parents. Or, and this just came out this week, sometimes the government is paying for the illegal immigrant parents to fly to the detention places to pick up their kids and then flying them both back home. All of this on the taxpayer dime.
That's what I heard. Doesn't that make us an accessory to the problem?
Basically, yeah. I mean, it makes the federal government an accessory to the alien smuggling. Essentially,
that's right.
The Biden administration is in a kind of is an accomplice to these smuggling groups and the cartels in moving illegal immigrants into the United States. And none of those people is ever going to leave. I can guarantee you that these minors, unaccompanied minors being delivered to their relatives who are already here, most of them as illegal aliens, and then the family units coming in who also have relatives here that they're coming to join, very few, if any, of those people will ever leave the United States, regardless of whether they're turned down for asylum or whatever. They're here to stay.
Right. Well, yeah, but that's exactly why they came here for this, what they put out there. And the cartels and the coyotes are doing all this smuggling. You know, the left has been brilliant in making that. Well, they branded this or packaged it, Mark, as a humanitarian deal somehow, the Save the World crusade. We can't even save our own country at this moment. In fact, we're crippling it, I would suggest to everybody. But the humanitarian aspect is such a rouge. I mean, when you think of the rape and the carnage of what's happening with these children and these young people and families that are crossing, imagine crossing a good part of the United States in some of the roughest areas and expect you're going to be all right when you get to the other side, all for the sake of money. It is a money laundering operation to the likes of what you've never seen out there. And yet our government, as you just said, Jess, is an accessory to the whole point here, a problem.
If I could just talk about this humanitarian part of it.
Please.
That's a real problem. In other words, you know, there's stories of these smugglers dropping toddlers from the top of the border wall, dropping them down onto the ground. And you've got, there was some 10-year-old lost in the desert on our side of the border that the Border Patrol just luckily came across. He had no idea where he was. They'd abandoned him there. Those are terrible problems. But they're not the problem. They're symptoms of the problem, which is this administration not enforcing the border. All of the bad things we're talking about, kids warehoused, you know, kids in cages. They don't use cages anymore. Now they use plastic. So what's the difference? Kids in plastic. All of those things are real problems, but fixing them by putting more money, more resources to process those people quicker doesn't solve anything. The problem is that the government, the Biden administration, has refused to enforce the border. And until that's fixed, all the rest of this stuff, whatever we do about these humanitarian problems, are just Band-Aids. In fact, they're worse than Band-Aids because all they're doing is going to make it even more attractive for more people to send their teenagers or to bring their kids with them across the border.
Yeah, Mark, well said. Correct me on this point, please, if it is wrong. But as I recall now, the kids in cages, as the narrative became that the media blasted out there. So those policies and how they operated were, as I recall, under the Obama administration, had created the cages or their fences, really. But cages, whatever you, that's what the media did, is they made it the worst possible thing they could in the living conditions there. And then what happened is the Trump administration, which, as you say, tried to change policies completely. I love the way you just pointed out, and I want every listener to understand what Mark just said. See, Congress is inept. They have not done the job. He's so right when he says, and they've been inept for decades on this issue. This really stinks, people. I mean, had they done half a job here or stood up and been responsible and governed as you elect them to be up there to govern, we wouldn't be in this predicament, because then no president would be able to come on and do what these clowns are doing, such as right now. And there are, you know, you can change an executive order with another pen easy. But, you know, you, when you get law in place, it's much more difficult to do that. And that's where Congress is supposed to do this. That's number one. But number two, those cages. And then Trump started to make really headway. He did an excellent job. You said it was very good. I would even go further and say the policies he put in place in reverse, Mark, were excellent and changed the trajectory of immigration. It finally became not a crisis anymore. But they pushed him on they blamed Trump for the kids in cages. That was the narrative heard around the world, that Trump was a bully and a gangster down there on the southern border. And now Biden comes in, changes all the policies, Mark, and he uses cellophane wrap from your kitchen cabinet, I guess. I don't know where the hell he gets it from, but it's cellophane wrap of some sort. Now, was that all done so there wouldn't be linked fences there or something that, alluded to cages or something, Mark, or am I dreaming that stuff up?
No, absolutely. They did it so because it was for reasons of appearances. And let me just explain what's going on here, because it really wasn't Obama's fault or Trump's fault or even really Biden's fault, at least in the immediate instance. So to explain what happens, if a kid comes over, not from Mexico, because a Mexican minor, we can just turn around, Mexican government takes him right back. Our law, which was stupidly passed years ago when there were very, very few underage illegal immigrants without, any parents with them, says that if somebody not from Mexico is caught, a so-called unaccompanied minor, they can't just be put on a plane back to their home country. They have to be delivered from the Border Patrol to Health and Human Services, which then is responsible for holding those kids until they can find a sponsor. Usually it's their illegal immigrant parent or other relative in the U.S., and deliver them to them. Okay, that's the law that exists now. What happened started under Obama is the numbers of these unaccompanied minors started going up because smugglers realized this was a good way of getting more people into the country. And they ended up backing up in the pipeline because HHS didn't have any room in shelters. So the kids had to be kept in Border Patrol facilities because they couldn't just throw them out onto the street. Border Patrol facilities weren't set up for holding kids, really anybody, for a long period of time.
Not those kinds of numbers.
And remember, they also have adults that they arrest. They got to keep the 25-year-old adult male illegal immigrant physically separate from the 13-year-old girl that they apprehended. So how do you do that in a place that doesn't have rooms? You put up chain link dividers. That was the kids in cages. It was to protect the children from adults and separate the men from the women. That was the point. Obama had to do it. Trump had to do it. Biden is having to do it. The thing is, whether they are taking steps to limit the number of new people coming in. Trump did that, like you said, successfully turned this problem not off, but way down. Biden actually is turning the problem up, is making it worse. He knows he's making it worse, and they don't care. Yeah. They're all right with it. Their goal is to get as many of these people into the country as possible, period.
Right. And they're achieving that goal. Mark, do all Americans know the reason they're doing that? I mean, I don't know if I've ever asked you that question, but I keep hearing it's for new voters, but what is the real reason they are so reckless with immigration policy?
Yeah, I think the new voters thing is real. I don't think it's the main thing, though, because that's a long term concern. And even just, adding warm bodies for the census, because if you have more warm bodies, even if they're illegal immigrants, you get more congressmen if you're a state or in the state legislature, the places with lots of illegal aliens get more representatives. So that's part of it. There's no question. I don't think that's the main thing. Most people do what they do out of principle because they think it's the right thing to do. And increasingly in the Democratic Party, it is now a mainstream position to say that no one who comes to our border, that we don't have any right to turn away anyone who comes to our border. Anyone who wants to move here has the right to do so. That is what this is about. They don't think it's legitimate for us to have border enforcement. And so if somebody shows up at our border, especially if it's underage or if it's a family with kids, they see it as our obligation to take them in, and that the American people are prohibited morally from saying, no, the rules don't allow you to come in. We have numerical limits. You're going to have to wait. They think that's wrong in principle. That's really, I think, what drives this.
Yeah, I think you have a very, very valid point here. And it kind of ties to what I tell listeners all the time, Mark. The left, the Marxist left, as I refer to them, not lovingly, but they have a different vision and version of America than we have, than patriots, people who love the Constitution, conservatives, than we have, clearly. They have a different vision of America.
And, I mean, let me insert here, liberals as well, old liberals, real liberals, not progressives, because patriotic liberals may well disagree with patriotic conservatives about, you know, tax policy and infrastructure and what have you. Okay, well, that's what we have Congress for. And there were people like that in the old days. Quite frankly, Cesar Chavez was like that. He believed in borders to protect workers. Barbara Jordan, the first Black congresswoman from the South, was the chairwoman of an immigration commission who believed in borders. She was a liberal. There was no question about it. But she was an American liberal. What we're seeing now is that the Democratic Party is increasingly run by what I call post-Americans. They don't necessarily hate America. I mean, some of them do, quite frankly. I think you can guess who I'm talking about. But most of them don't hate America. Joe Biden doesn't hate America. Hillary Clinton doesn't hate America. But they are post-American. They do not see their chief responsibility as zealously defending and promoting the interests of the American people specifically. They've moved beyond that into kind of a post-national sort of European Union kind of view of things. And that's just, that's not a difference you can split. There's no compromise there. I mean, the question is, who are you, you know, who are you for? Who are you representing? And increasingly, unfortunately, and you see some of this on the libertarian right, but it's more on the left, that they just don't see themselves as having more of a responsibility for an American in, you know, in the ghetto or in Appalachia than they do to somebody in Uruguay or Albania.
Yeah. I mean, it, you can't really top what you're saying right there. You nailed it. And they do have that. There is that sense that it's hard to follow the Bunsen ball with the Marxist left. You're much kinder with your words than I am. I mean, I call them out to be the Marxist left that they are. But there is the new guard and there is the old guard and there and the extremists on all sides of the aisle. You're exactly right. But the Democrats who would fight these things, at least they believed in the rule of law, Mark. At least they believed in the rule of law, that the ones that you pointed out moments ago, the old Democrats, the JFK Democrats, the blue dogs, you know. And they agreed that immigration was a beautiful American trait, but they also believed in some sort of a protection border, not just to be like we are right now, the crisis. Now, let's talk about the word crisis a moment. And, you know, the other thing is the media is, you know, I started, it's funny, when you type in even the immigration in any of the search engines right now, you basically get nothing, just love and peace and crickets on the border there. It's for such a major story, it is so quiet. And I'm just thinking to myself here today before coming on with you, if any part of these things that were happening right now were on Trump's watch, this would be the lead story in all of the papers and all of the television programs, and they would beat this thing to death. They would call them cellophane kids. And they would have all kinds of memes out there and they'd be pushing this thing and tormenting the Trump administration. And yet there are crickets right now with the media. And Politico comes out and says they don't want to use the word crisis. They had an internal memo that I think was leaked or something happened. It was reported on through the Washington Examiner. And the media is trying to soft sell all this stuff when they do talk about it. But they are just playing cover for Biden. What do you make of these crickets? What's taking place?
Yeah, I mean, I actually think it's what you're seeing in the media is what I was describing in the leadership of the Democratic Party, too, is that our legacy media have increasingly become themselves post-American. You know, it used to be we had partisan newspapers, you know, back like before World War II. That's why you have papers called the, you know, the Democrat Gazette or the Springfield Republican. In other words, they were partisan papers, but they were all American papers. They were patriotic partisans, patriotic Democrats and patriotic Republicans, you know, who may have hated each other, but they were at least, you know, they're all operating from the same starting point. Increasingly, what you're seeing with the, you know, the sort of prestige media, and I put that in quotes, you know, the New York Times and everybody who takes them seriously, CNN, what have you, is that they have become post-American as well. They, you know, if they're reporting on a war, it's not how are our people doing in the war. It's not even like during Vietnam, where our media was saying, you know, we shouldn't be in this war. We are making a mistake. Okay, well, that's a position you can take. They aren't, America is now them to the media. It's not us anymore. Yeah. They don't see it that way. And so, you know, they don't think that the, you know, deplorables and the rubes in America have any right to keep illegal immigrants out of the country any more than, you know, some of the progressive leadership does. So that's why you see things like you referred to Politico saying they're not allowed to use border crisis anymore. Ramesh Panuru posted that he posted a link to that story from the Examiner about Politico, and he had links to all of the other things that Politico had called a crisis, not just the climate crisis, but all kinds of, you know, every crisis. I mean, I'm exaggerating here, but, you know, the banana crisis,
right?
But the border is not a crisis. I mean, yeah. The double standard and the hypocrisy there is obvious to anybody.
Yeah, it truly, truly is. Is there, in our last thought here, Mark, is there, I don't know that there is an answer to this point here, is there any silver lining to the immigration policies right now, or is it just buckle up and get through this administration and see if we can get on to another day?
Yeah, no, I don't see much silver lining other than, you know, that they're almost certainly going to get their clocks cleaned next year. And I don't say this, you know, as a Republican partisan. I mean,
well, that's silver lining right there.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. So, okay, there's a silver lining. But, you know, that's a lot of clouds for a little bit of silver lining. I mean, this is going to be pretty bad for a long time. And even if the Republicans take the House, then what? Biden is still in charge of the immigration agencies.
Right. Yeah, no, I hear you. It would have to be a slam dunk. You'd have to have a slam dunk in the House and the Senate, major majority rules. If the American people wake up, and again, it does come back to what Mark Gregorian and I are talking about right now. You ask yourself out there, my friends, and ask your family and friends and neighbors and people you know and love, what kind of vision do you want for America? It's really what it is, because as he pointed out so well, the extreme left, the Marxist left, as you know, I call them, is what they are. The policies they're initiating on our nation are dangerous as hell. And as Mark, you said it perfectly, you know, the clouds that are forming are pretty dramatic. And yeah, silver lining, I guess. I'm more or less looking for an Olympic gold medal win here, Mark, somehow in the next election, you know. But we'll see if we get there, right?
We'll see.
It's hard to say, but, you know, and then, like you say, a couple more years. I'm not sure Biden will make the 4 years, but we won't wager here now. But we kind of took wagers before the election if that was going to happen. Very interesting. Tremendous thank you as we're out of time here with Mark Gregorian, certainly one of the best voices on this topic in our country, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. What a great program. Friends, you hear us here on Talk Radio Sunday mornings, a weekly news magazine. Goes to podcast Sunday afternoon. Get it anywhere in the world on podcast again. Spotify, Stitcher, iHeart, Pandora, you name it, we're on it. But this program here on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network on iHeart catches again 10 o'clock, 6 o'clock's an encore later in the day. Thank you again, my fellow Americans, for being on the journey with me. And let's share the out loud truth for sure. It's time to get involved and get loud.